growth in Richmond. And part of the annexation started there, came over the top of San Pablo Ridge, down to San Pablo Dam Road. It crossed Dam Road and took in Dan Big Burgers and the Elsa Rennie Herald building on the corner of Dam Road and El Portal. The Mason's Lodge crossed El Portal and took in Rancho School and up the hill to annex the cemetery, the Hilltop Drive. Crossing San Pablo Dam Road at El Portal was very important for the annexation because that closed off the corridor to San Pablo. And this annexation was probably 30 to 50 feet wide swath. So the church that you see on San Pablo Dam Road at El Portal, part of that is in the city of Richmond and is banned and comes across Dam Road, across El Portal, and up to the cemetery. The Elsa Rennie Herald building on the corner was actually left out of the annexation because the property owner complained that if he was annexed, he could no longer print the county legal notices. So they let him out of the annexation. Now, the annexation included this whole band of San Pablo Ridge from El Portal to Tri-Lane. Actually, Richmond even cuts across Dam Road out where the entrance to Kennedy Grove is. The entrance, Kennedy Grove. The annexation crossed San Pablo Dam Road in at least three places. The landowner of one of those parcels on Dam Road near Greenbridge was promised if he ever wanted to build on his property, the city would allow him 100 units per acre, because they really needed his land, because his land touched the Antifa property. And at this time, the school district had no say in which jurisdiction they went in. So once the city's annexation touched the Antifa property, oh, then that definitely is now in the city of Richmond. Part of this area included the May Farm, and then this became the White Cliffs development in the 50s. To the 60s, and it stretched from about Santa Rita to Painted Pony. And then, of course, there have been many other annexations since then, and lots of different stories. I got interested in developments because a neighbor walked his dog in a vacant lot on Meadowbrook Drive. There was a sign posted on the back of the lot that the property, which was set aside for a church, was to be rezoned for apartments. Then, through connections at Valley View School, residents formed the May Valley Association and worked together to fight the apartments. And you'll recognize some of these names: Bob and Shirley Sharp, Nadine and Ken Larson, Bob and Eleanor Loyne, George and Pat Schmidt, and others. The joint efforts of residents on both sides of the line, Richmond and the county, helped form the Elsa Rennie Valley Planning and Zoning Advisory Committee and the County Service Area Recreation 9 Committee, with the help of the supervisor, Nancy Batten. Now we're going to skip to the 80s. And it just so happens you all know who Steve Young is. He's in the news again recently. But in the 80s, Steve Young was playing football for the World Football League in Los Angeles. One of the owners of the team was Bill Oldenburg. Now, Bill Oldenburg was a millionaire investor with an office in the Transamerica Pyramid in San Francisco. And every time they made $1 million on paper, they had this big gong and they banged it in the office. Well, it turns out Bill Oldenburg bought this property, about 360 acres, for less than $1 million. And that's roughly from Valley View to Tri-Lane. His Parkland project called for building 1,200 Mediterranean-style homes along the ridgeline. He was able, somehow, to convince the Richmond City Council to approve the project. Then he had the project reassessed as though it was actually built. Then he sold the land to Utah Savings and Loans. That company went bankrupt. So, over time, this land has been sold or up for development several times. Projects range from 2,000 homes to 600 homes. After the owners got site information about the underground, the soil condition, the underground water, nothing has been built yet. Now, fast forward to August 10, 2005. Now we know that this old parkland site and this wiggly line here is the 400-foot elevation level. And that means that if you build above it, you must put in your own water supply system. EVMA does not put in water systems above the 400-foot level. So that anyone building up in this area, it would take a considerable amount of money just to get the property ready to be built on. Now we know this old parkland site has serious problems due to poor soil, flies, and underground water. The present plan calls for, and this is correct, calls for 36 homes on 23 acres with 330-some acres kept in a conservation land bank for the alligator whipsnake or other threatened or endangered species. Now, what that means is this is the most stable property. This is where he's going to be building, right around, curving around behind Canyon Oak. But what this means is that the whipsnake habitat in other parts of the county may be used for building. If the developer pays X dollars to this developer to save that acre over here, it's called a mitigation plan. I'm doing something bad here, but I'm paying back by saving an acre over there. The property is now undergoing an environmental impact report. The report will be made public sometime in October. There's a 45-day comment period, then a volume 2 is done, and another public hearing is held. Now, what I did, I didn't give you this first because I didn't want you to be dead. So, this covers what I just talked about. 3, 4, 5. And I can pass one around. The purpose of my being here is that the staff wanted to find out what do you guys do. So that's where we're going with this.
Where is that area?
Okay. If you want to go through these, okay. This is called Canyon Oak 2. And these developers, they keep changing names every time anyone comes in. Clark Road is this yellow-shaped project, and right at the moment, the EIR was so poorly done, the city of Richmond would not even accept it. It was just ripped up by so many people out here. So there's nothing happening here yet. Doesn't mean it won't be. Forest Green, this is the old Johnson property. Doctor owns this private place at the top. Forest Green is down below. 120 homes on 80.6 acres. An EIR is being done. And most of this, as I said, is in the city of Richmond. Other things, this is Taylor Ranch. And Taylor Ranch, the parcel is about 65 to 70 acres. They could actually develop 5 acres. And the reason they can only develop 5 acres is when the homes at the top of Valley View were put in, the owner of the Taylor Ranch traded off what could have been built on Taylor Ranch. They sold their development rights to the developer below. So the developer there at the top of the Valley View where the homes are could build homes closer together and more of them. And then as payback, those 60 acres on Taylor Ranch were then permanent dedicated open space. And every once in a while somebody, a new owner came in and said, oh, I'm going to build up here. And you know, he said, no, you can't. It's dedicated open space. So they have actually 5 acres that they could build up housing or something, but so far nothing's come forward. Braddock and Logan, those are the 40 homes being put in right now on Valley View at May Road. And then Castro Ranch Road is here. The DeMay project is right here. It was originally 150 acres and 250 homes. It is now down to only 33 acres, and they're talking 51 homes. But they're still right now getting some more soil samples because they suddenly found out, oh, even though we looked at this project 15 years ago, we're finding more flies and problems on site. So that's still undergoing review right now in the city of Richmond. Napa Ranch, it used to be about 120 acres. The older family members sold off 100 acres next door. So the Napa Ranch is now 20 acres, and there is a developer interested in it. He is talking about buying it, putting in 40 homes. And this is where we got a little shocked when he used the word six-pack. What? Six-pack? What are you talking about? Well, turns out in other parts of the county, maybe up around Sacramento, that what some of the developers have done is put in a cement pad, like a patio, and then have six homes gathered around this patio. So that what it does is cluster the homes together and then leave more open space. So right now, the developer is, you know, juggling around trying to figure out what kind of plan he wants. He's also looking at, should he try to annex to Richmond? Because then the fire response would be from Valley View Amen Road and not from Abney Way, because firefighters can't agree that the closest station should respond. But the problem there, because he has talked to Richmond planners, Richmond is going to be doing a general plan update. So they're saying, well, we won't be ready to annex anything for 22 to 24 months until we get our general plan update. So he may just stay with the county. The other about 250 acres here now called Golden Oak is outside the urban limit line. And unless there is a change with Glasgow, it cannot be developed as heavily as the other areas. Okay, let's speed up a little bit. Pinole has 40 homes off Appian in Duncan Canyon under review. No action, but you never know. San Pablo has planned on 44 homes off Hillcrest Road above Rayleigh. And I had a neighbor call today with some latest information that it's on hold right now, waiting for the developers to get front money. Because these days, when you do development, a lot of the different planning departments, they want the money up front to pay for the staff time. So the EIR has not come out on that yet. With all that's going on, roughly 856 units, 8 to 10 car trips per day would be added, and that's roughly 6,800 to 8,500. And then using the school district's figures, there'd be about 599 students. If you're going through the packet, the next one is the district TMZ. Then, I brought a few extra of these. There's only there. So this is a list of, let me just divide them up and see if I can get a few to every row. One of the things that planning zoning does is look at the development in the city and the county, and sometimes it's a real eye-opener to look and see what they are and where they are. And that's the next thing on your list. And there are some contact numbers there if you have any. Okay, now that you are looking through the packet, page part two starts with the pink sheet, or the orange sheet, if you want to call it that. This is the current listing of members of TNC. Three members are appointed by the Richmond May Valley Neighborhood Council. Three members are appointed by the Elkhead Chamber of Commerce. three members are appointed by the committee itself, and then there's one alternate also from each of those groups. So at the present time, we have 9 members, and of those 9 members, 5 are in the county, 4 live in Richmond, and we have openings. The chamber, we just had someone resign, Bonnie Scott, she just was overwhelmed. So the chamber has one full opening for a full membership, and anyone on the MAC could apply for that. We used to have 3 MAC members on the group, then things changed, so now we have 1. So there could be another MAC member on the group with the chamber. There's an opening for an alternate with the at-large group, and there's an opening for an alternate with May Valley. Page 8, you're looking at our bylaws, and I'd say our statement of what we do is probably Section 4. There's a draft here of what we do, which is when a project comes in, we try and talk to the developer or the applicant, find out information, go out and talk to the neighbors, make sure they understand the process if they want to appear at the county or the city of Richmond review process. We often write letters just saying, these are our concerns, we'd like you to look at this and this, to the county planner or the city planner. And then as the project moves forward, then we would take a vote. And most of our votes, I'd say, are the same. We have it's not very contentious. We usually agree with each other. But there's always a chance, and if somebody wants to go a separate way and send their own separate views, that's also a definite possibility.
When you say we write a letter, who's we?
Please don't speak up. Put up your hand, please. Go ahead and answer him, Ellen.
All right. That would be, when I say we are talking about the Upstanding Valley Planning and Zoning Committee. For those of you that have a packet, page 12, this is what something looks like when it comes to the county. May I call on Dave then, or do you want to call on him?
No, go ahead.
All right, Dave?
Yeah, I appreciate you've been doing this for a long time. Sorry. My question is more to a relationship to what the committee supports for. I mean, do you report to anybody? Do you report to the city council? Do you report to the county? Do you report to the mayor? What is the, how is the
city
supported?
Okay.
I'm sure you may be going to address that later on, but that's sort of my concern. I want to hear that. I understand more how this all works.
Okay. All right. In this last, usually I come to the monthly meetings of the MAC and go over the agenda with them. Ruby is also vice chair on our committee, so she knows what we're doing. We are an advisory group, so we are not constrained so much by the Brown Act, so we have a little more leeway in what we do. But, for example, last week I went to City of Richmond to their Planning Commission meeting, because I wanted to have an item held over because we had not had a chance to discuss it. So sometimes we will go to meetings at the city or at the county in Martinez. We have a good working relationship with county staff, so that if we want to find out, I got a call from Michonne Cross, who's a county planner, and she was saying that one of the projects we were concerned about is off Renfrew Court. There's one 10 home subdivision on Orion Court, which is off Renfrew, but then right next to that entrance is going to be a second entrance to another 10 home subdivision. And so we have been talking with the county. You know, we're really concerned about this traffic in and out, a cul-de-sac and a cul-de-sac off a cul-de-sac.
How does one become a member of the community?
You can contact the Upstanding Chamber. You can contact me. I happen to be president of the May Valley Neighborhood Council. Or you could come to one of our meetings and just express that. Because as I said, we do have
Okay, you wouldn't go to the Mass to become a member of the Jewish
community. No, we are completely
separate.
And that's part of the reason why I'm here, because as new people are elected to the Mass, they don't necessarily always know where are you and why aren't you under us, because we're the elected body. But the reason we're not under the Mass is because we crossed the line. We've got Richmond residents and county residents. So we have a standing when we go to Richmond that we represent Richmond area. We have a standing when we go to the county because we represent the people in the county.
Just a minute, Eleanor. Let me say something first. When the MAC was originally put into being by Supervisor Jim Rogers, it was decided that the existing committees in the Valley would not go under the MAC. That included planning and zoning, and that included the R9. Those two committees were already set up, operating, and doing a good job before the MAC ever came into being. So the first people on the MAC decided that that would not, they would not be included in it. Yes, this lady's had her hand up.
What you just said kind of changed what I was going to say, because I have been appointed to the R9 by the supervisor, so I know that I'm appointed to represent certain people, and I can be recalled and that kind of thing. And I'm not concerned about the job you're doing or planning and zoning, but I'm trying to look at it from my point of view as somebody who lives here and is concerned about development. Is I want some advocacy. I mean, I'm feeling like Richmond is continuing to annex, and planning and zoning has done a good job of interfacing with developers and keeping track of where things are going. But I'm feeling a missing piece in terms of a mission statement, a vision that for how we want our community to be, and that there would be a body that would look out for that and that would be accountable to the people who live here. And I guess I just don't see where is that? Do we need another committee that's accountable to the MAC that will do that? Or is this something, is planning and zoning the way it works here? Is that similar to the way it works in other parts of the county? Because I thought planning and zoning needed to be kind of responsive to a community. And to me, it seems like the interests of Richmond and the interests of El Cabrini aren't always the same. Although the Valley, because we are in this watershed together and the bioregion and all of that, we have some joint interests, but the city of Richmond doesn't have the same interests as the residents of the Valley, is my guess.
That's correct.
So I don't really have a specific question. I'm just feeling a vacuum of advocacy for to hold the line, to keep El Cabrini intact and to stop this runaway development.
Well, I think we do that because we will go to Richmond and tell them we don't like the way they're doing things, they should change things, they file appeals. Because of our interest, well, this led to another group, the El Cabrini Valley Legal Defense Fund, which has filed 7 lawsuits against the city of Richmond. One was declared moot, one was settled out of court, 3 we won, and 1 we lost on appeal. So there is this advocacy group, and part of what we do is go out and knock on doors and make sure that if there's, so often happens, there's a development on one side in Richmond, we want to be sure the neighbors know what's going on and that they have a right to go down and express their opinion, talk to the planner, ask questions, that kind of thing. And so that's what we try to do when the sinkhole happened up on Savannah Avenue. My deacon was good enough to take that over, and that sinkhole had been there since January. And I mean, this is a hole 10 feet wide and maybe 10 feet to 15 feet deep in these people's driveway. And they didn't know what to do. And I They sent me a letter. I got in contact with Supervisor Joy in the county. Then Mike accepted that as a job, and he went out to their house, and he said that many times, and it's not settled. But there's a lot more information out that they know right now that they didn't before.
Okay, Eleanor, Marilyn had a question.
Well, it's not really a question. Number one, the MACs, other MACs in Contra Costa County are who they do the planning and zoning.
Right.
Why do you think that you can do a better job? And you've been on it for 30 years and some of the same people. Why can you do a better job? Well, it says in 1976,
right,
1975, Eleanor right. Loy, and Ruby has been on it. So it's the same people that are doing it for this many years, and we gradually, Richmond has gradually taken over El Segundo. But why don't you think it, an elected person should be running, that it should be completely under the MAC as it is in other areas?
Well,
that's the most important thing that's done here in El Segundo.
One, because we represent both city and county. And when the group started off, the chamber had a group that looked at planning. The May Valley Association of Richmond had a group that looked at planning. And we would go to the city or the county. And the comments were pretty much the same from either body. Well, you represent the chamber and the businesses, and you represent the homeowners. But you don't agree. Oh, well, then we don't really have to listen. We can make our own decision because you don't have a consensus. So by having the committee work together, we have a consensus of what we want to see happen. We want people to know what's going on. We don't want Michigan to come out and just take things over and say we're going to put 100 homes in there or apartments or whatever. We don't want the county to ignore us, ignore the residents of El Segundo and not put in sidewalks where they're needed and, you know, things like that. And because we are, you guys meet once a month for 3 hours. We meet once a month for 3 hours. But then when those people leave that meeting, they are committed to probably at least 6 more hours going out and visiting sites, knocking on doors. I know Mike went out and posted things in the neighborhood. One of the, let's see, page 20, I think it is. This is a letter that I wrote to neighbors on Pine Hill Drive, because right next to them there's going to be a lot split. And so each of the neighbors got a description from me about what was going on, who they could call at the county and find out what was happening. And that's a very important part of this. But sometimes the neighbors get left out by accident or on purpose, who knows. There have been annexations where Richmond was going to take in the Canyon Oak and then the county property next door. And I saw in the legal notice, talked to some of the neighbors. They didn't know anything about it. And they would have been pulled into that annexation in Richmond if we hadn't gone out, talked to them, and then they had a chance to go to LAFCO and say, we don't want to go to Richmond. Why are you making us do that? And so LAFCO stepped off and, you know, let them out and said, okay, we'll just annex this one for you.
Okay, we have the Brown back there.
Just a quick comment on that. I have to go home at 8 o'clock, and so I'm going to get home early. My name is Dave Brown. I grew up here in El Segundo. My family runs Canyon Kool-Aid. We live right around the corner from here. I'm on the school board in West Contra Costa. Until the last year, did not get very active in El Segundo politics. I kept abreast of it. I wanted to downtown revitalize, you know, just and also protect the boundaries of El Segundo. And the more and more I learn, the more and more I'm upset about what's happened. But recently, because members on the MAC have really have gotten me engaged in this, I'm really concerned. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater necessarily, but I do know that Eleanor and others in the PNZ have done some great work out recently, not only recently, but in the past. I firmly believe in democracy, and I firmly believe that an elected body like the MAC has to have committees report to it formally, just like you would in a city. I would like to see the MAC operate more like the city council, even though I know we're not a city, but say, hey, we're in charge of our boundaries, and we're going to do whatever it takes to represent the will and the needs of the people here. The R9, the PNZ should be a subcommittee to the MAC. Now, with the PNZ,
And this is why I'm saying not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think it might be possible that you talked about the connection between Richmond and El Segundo, the whole El Segundo Valley, that we could have a majority of members appointed by the MAC and a couple of members that might come from the May Valley Neighborhood Association and even a couple from the chamber. But I honestly believe it needs to be a subcommittee at the MAC. A majority has to be appointed by this elected body. And then we can go and say, hey, you guys aren't doing your job, but we can re-elect you or unelect you. Right now, there's nothing like that going on. I think that's wrong. And I'm going to come back to every meeting that I have to advocate for really the MAC taking more leadership and having these committees be accountable to our elected bodies. So that's the only thing I'd say.
Can I make a comment?
Questions back here. But, all right, go ahead, Matt.
Okay, one, I just want to say what we're doing now is trying to get a meeting set up with members of the school board, the teachers, the parents, the groups out here, because the end is a mess. People need to step in and help. So we talked to Greg Price, talked to Sarah Benton, talked to Supervisor Joya, and we would like really your help and support with that. Now, one of the things the MAC has done a lot for the community, but their commitment usually ends right when this meeting ends. We have offered people at the MAC to come and be guest members just so they can find out how we operate. The chamber pays us $200 a year for our expenses. May Valley pays us $200 a year for our members, for our mailing costs and all. Telephone, a lot of costs people just take on themselves. I don't know that Supervisor Joya would be willing to pay extra money for the MAC to reproduce all the paperwork. I don't know that he would be willing. I have heard Terrence say that the MAC should only meet once a month. Well, meeting once a month is no way going to cover the extensive projects that are going on. We get roughly 6 new projects a month. We follow along at least 40 of them because it can take a month to a year before some project is finally either decided on or dropped or moving ahead. So,
Eleanor, wait a minute. The lady back here had a question. Let me just make a comment before you leave. One thing I think that a lot of people don't understand is if you own property or you buy a property in El Sobrante, and you want to build something, as long as you're building within the zoning guidelines, you can build. If a developer comes out here and he wants to build 36 homes, he wants to build 40 homes, he wants to build 50 homes, if he's got the property, he owns it, he can build it. The one thing that planning and zoning has done that I don't think people give them credit for is they go out and they talk to the developer, they try to get them to cut down the number of houses, they try to make them look at the schools, how many of the kids are going to move in here, what schools are they going to go to, how many sidewalks are you going to put in, what are you going to do about the traffic on the damn road, and all those things are taken into consideration. So that actually it may look like the builders are taking over, and that's the feeling I have too. But there's nothing can be done about it as long as they buy the property, they own it, and they build within the zoning regulations. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm sorry. This lady was first.
Okay. I would say that I first throw my hand to say I really supported the remarks by Dave. I have to say, we've kind of recently got involved over the four screens stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of new to learning how our town works and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then talked to a lot of people during that petition drive, and people would always ask, who do you contact and where's the city council? And it's always been kind of a mystery how to find out who represents us. And then you were informative, and it sounds like what you just said, all that is valuable service, I'm sure, all the knowledge and all the stuff. But it does strike me, it was odd, like the four screen thing, we learned that you just company the developer to county planner to suggest about the Young property, and it seems like a gray area where...
The developer, I had suggested it to him because the committee felt it was a safer access than off Clark Road and Westwood.
Yeah, that's a little bit more about it.
Okay, I think
it seems like an odd, a lot of power in an organization that isn't accountable in some way. It just seems like it makes sense to have a map be like the city council where...
And the map could always take up anything that they choose and write up a report, send it in to the county, say we disagree with this, we want these conditions added. That's something, but they haven't been willing to do that. They could have. Okay. They could have taken on the sinkhole up on Granny Island, which I thought somebody would.
Wait a minute. We are going to be working on that later. I think we have some questions over here.
Well, you made a statement that anybody who owns a piece of property can build anything they want to.
As long as it's within the zoning area.
Okay. I'd like to ask Eleanor, why is the P&Z punishing this poor guy across the street from us up here to build that auto repair shop? I feel he's being punished. He comes over and talks to me every once in a while.
All right, because...
I mean, I'm just asking. He's crying to me.
Our concern with an auto repair shop, it's right next to an apartment building, and those windows face on that property where that auto repair shop is going to be. So there's going to be noise, smells, lights that are going to bother those people. On the other side are homes. Those homes, again, are going to be impacted by all the same things, the smells, the lights, traffic in and out. And at the same time, if you look just at Appian Way and look at the number of homes, 9 unit townhouses on Appian, 16 apartments, Appian, 10 townhouses, Appian, 22 homes, Appian Way, 31 homes, Appian Way. Appian Way is changing, and it is changing to homes, apartments, townhouses, duets, and then we're going to put a new auto shop there. Now, according to the rule, he can do that, and the county could allow that. And so we're at a position where we can say we don't agree. And with this, again, if this goes in, we need at least these key conditions, such as hours of operation and some of these closed down, things like that. But it's going to have a big impact on the existing neighbors as well as all these new homes that are going in there.
Would you rather see apartments there? Is that what you're saying, or houses? I'm just asking.
That's my personal opinion. Yes.
Okay.
But you know, you cannot. The county is still the final person, the final people that decide. And you can pay money for an appeal, but that's where the final decision is.
Okay. We need to call. Something here. We are running out of time for one thing. I will take three more questions. Marilyn has one. The gentleman back here has one. Barbara has one. All right, we'll take four. Dawn.
And then we're
going
to have to move on. Could I have about 3 to 5 minutes to wrap up?
All right. Why don't you wrap up, and then we'll have Marilyn, and then we have the gentleman back there, and then we have Barbara, and then Dawn. All right.
I guess I have my hand up for a really long time.
All right, we really have to move on. We're running out of time.
Okay, if you're looking through this pamphlet, what I have on pages 17, 18, and 19, this is just to show you, I'm not the one that does all the writing. The members in P&Z, if they take a project, we talk about it, we talk to each other, and then here are some letters that have been written to the county and about our concerns for various projects, and then the minutes from July 14th, and then the thing I wanted to call to your attention, we have a meeting tomorrow night here. We start at 6 o'clock and 8 p.m. or longer, and the items on the agenda, rezone property, let me start again, request to subdivide a parcel into 5 lots, one existing home, 4 new homes at 4996 San Pablo Dam Road. Rezoned property at 4600 San Pablo Dam Road for multi-family high density. This is going to be moved, I just got a call today, to our September meeting, and they are planning to take out an existing single family home so that they can have more room to put in apartments if they get the rezoning. Canyon Oaks, that's the one on Dam Road right around Canyon Oaks, number one. review the plan for 36 homes. Then Knappen Ranch, Tony Kislinky, that has changed. He called. He's going to be there at 6 o'clock instead of 7:25 because he has to go to the airport. Property on Valley View at Sunset Drive, we got a call to put that off to September. And then also Singular Wireless, they're going to put antennas on top of the Hody's Chiropractic building at 435 Valley View Road. That the person in charge, Ms. Sockleville, is on vacation this week, so she asked for it to be put off. And then it turned out that then Singular Wireless is also going to put in a fake tree, or they want to anyway, on the Taylor Ranch with antennas. So they'll be talking about that in September. Then Singular also wants to upgrade their antennas on the Edmund tank on Coach, at the top of Coach Drive in Carriage Hills North. So we'll be talking about those three Singular antennas coming up in September. So this is what we do. It takes a lot of time and effort and money, and it also allows us to be more flexible. So I have no problem with having more, at least two. We were told we have at least three members of the MAC on our group. I have no problems with that at all. And if, like I said, if the MAC wanted to take on some particular projects in Elsa Branny that were really hot button items for them, we could help, we could support them, but we would be separate because we don't want to give up the connections to Richmond because we have a good working relationship with the staff there. We know how Richmond operates. We can explain to people in the county or Richmond residents out here, this is who you should contact. And we're not, we don't have a set agenda. It's each thing by itself so we can do the best and keep Elsa Branny as much ours as we want to.
Thank you, Eleanor. Okay, first of all, I'd like to say that I've not heard anything here tonight that would change my mind. I agree with Dave Brown that the P&Z should be, as it is under other MACs, it should be done by the MAC. You're not a recognized advisory body, which I know. Why is that? Why are you not a recognized advisory body?
Well, we get mail directly from the county sent to planning and zoning. They call us and ask us for our comments so they can include them in staff reports at the city of Richmond and at the county.
Well, I'm sure they do, but you're not like we are a recognized advisory body.
So
are
we.
All right, let's move on. Let's come on after we.
Yeah, I'm Earl Combs. I have property right behind the Midway Muffler Shop. And I wrote a letter to the county in opposition to the automotive repair. My feeling is that we have five automotive repair shops within a half a mile distance. We don't need six. And four out of the five are junky operations, old cars, old trash. Mm-hmm. And we just do not need another automotive.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Barbara. I feel that the Elsa Branny MAC hasn't been well known. Certainly the sinkhole problem should have come directly to us, and we should have handled it. The fact that it went directly to another body it is because they're aware of that body. And I guess they weren't aware that they should bring that kind of a problem directly to us. As soon as we were notified of that, I know I personally went out and talked to the woman, and it had been all the way down the line by the time we've even gotten involved in it. And I'd like to see that change. I think we need to be more reactive.
Thank you, Barbara.
Wendy? Yeah, well, I just appreciated the comments from everybody. I, too, feel like I really appreciate the work of P&Z. I know that the members do an incredible job, and I know that they work really hard, and I don't think that that's the issue. I think the issue that I've heard is about accountability and leadership. And I do feel, and I think I've heard from council members, that maybe there haven't in the past been issues around how much time people want to commit, but I think we have a committed body. And I think we have people who want to provide leadership to our community and who really want to see things move forward and who want to see a vibrant, wonderful Elsa Branny. And I'm concerned when I hear about all the projects being planned, and I hear that developers can build, I know developers can build however things are zoned, and we've been waiting for 2 years for an amendment to our general plan that covers, you know, Appian Way and San Pablo Dam Road, and now we have all these single-family homes proposed for Appian Way, which is one of the corridors that was discussed about being, you know, single-family homes, apartments, that was talked about for becoming, you know, a nice area for walking, for biking, for business. And so I feel like we really do need to be proactive. And I was frustrated that we didn't get a chance to have on our agenda tonight a chance to talk about that draft EIR and to have a little bit of an opportunity for the MAC to talk about the proposed changes, because while I just feel like we keep waiting, and I don't want to be waiting, I think we really need to be proactive. And along those lines, Erica and myself, we have done a lot of exploring around what do general plans of other communities look like. We've talked to a lot of people who've recently redone their general plans. There's a lot of new stuff happening out there in the world of general plans. And we had community meetings for 6 years that where residents had an opportunity to meet and to share what they wanted. And from my meetings with the county, it wasn't clear to me that what they are going to be handing to us, perhaps next month, necessarily reflected a lot of the concerns and the issues that residents have proposed. So we've written a vision, and we feel like it would be important for the MAC. We had it on our agenda, but we haven't had a chance to discuss it fully for months. But we feel like the MAC should adopt a vision for El Sobrante. It should be something that the residents, an echo of what we've heard from residents over the past number of years with town hall meetings, with charrettes, with all kinds of things. There are written reports, there are documents. So we tried to echo what we heard and put it into writing, and I hope it can go on the agenda next month for the MAC to have a chance to really discuss it and, you know, to adopt it as soon as we can and to put it forward to the county and say, look, this is what we want here, and we want to be sure that what you're doing is in tandem with what we are interested in. So I'm going to pass these out. I have 30 copies. I'm not sure I have enough for everybody in the audience.
Out of order, Chairman. When I tried to talk, you cut me off. You've been talking now for 5 minutes. Because you didn't like what I said, obviously.
No. Okay, well, I think she's finished.
I hope so.
No, I said, I'm sorry, Lisa. I said that would be the end of this. All right, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to thank Eleanor for the presentation because, as one of the recently elected MAC members, it has been something that I've been trying to get a little more clarity on. And as a person with a bit of a planning background and who was a general contractor building my own house in El Sobrante, I know how much work it is. I know how much work it is to go to the county, to get your permit, your application. It's an enormous amount of time. I'm noticing in this discussion a bit of a us, them, the MAC, the P&Z. And it's confusing to me. I mean, I don't really know what the history is. I've only been here for about 5 years as a resident. But I'm really hoping that we can move away from that, because what I hear are some really important issues. I mean, I hear that we all care very much about maintaining certain elements that we all have moved here for and chosen to stay here for. I'm hearing community folks voice concerns about accountability. I'm hearing from some MAC members currently an interest in becoming more proactive. So I think if we hold those larger concerns and goals, which I think are good ones and virtuous ones and important ones, I would really hope that we can work together, the Chamber, May Valley Association, and the MAC, to actually just have a conversation about how do we together, right? I'm not sure what form or structure it may take, but best meet the needs of the Valley, of Richmond, of El Sobrante, of the community. Because times are changing. You know, Appian is not only the one thing that's changing. The community has changed. I mean, the folks from La Comina, I know, have been very, very active and responsive to things that are happening in their neighborhood. So I think it's important that we reflect what is current. And I think what Barbara said, we're not sure, you know, in the past maybe the MAC hasn't been very proactive, but we are a new group. there are new folks here today. So I would like to actually set up a meeting and maybe meet with Eleanor and Chamber. I guess it would be Scott Tufnell from the Chamber to actually discuss, maybe Supervisor Joya too. I don't know. To just talk about, you know, there are some concerns that have been raised and how do we move together as a community in partnership to address it.
Thank you, Erica. We have to move on.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Eleanor. I appreciate your presentation and
I've got two
we will.
So you can see what the packet looks like.
This is all the mail, 32, since I put the packet together.
All right, we really have to move on.
Okay,
so in response to your statement, Erica, why don't you give up if you can set up a meeting with the Secretary's Office, Chamber of Commerce, and...
This is a PIA. This is not an action item, so you haven't heard of an action. You didn't let
actually,
me do it
last time. All right, let's move on then.
Thank you.
Let's skip that for now. And we'll
thank you.
Okay, we're moving on to our discussion items. And so the I believe our El Serrani Municipal Advisory Council bylaws are ready for the board for supervisor's approval.
I want to thank you for the very fine and thank you for this job. I want to thank you for the very fine job. I want to compliment you on that, and I believe they are ready to go to the board for supervisors. Unfortunately, Terrence is not here tonight, so I can't give a question. I will pass on. Okay. Question on this item before you move on. There was a missing board resolution. Did you get that? A what? A missing board resolution. For three times I've been trying to get it.
Did you get that?
That had to go into the bylaws to be sent to the board. It was a board resolution for one of the sections.
It was for one where the business members were deleted.
Oh, right.
Did you get that? Well, you can't really send it without that because that's part, that rescinds a whole section. So you need to have the board resolution number in there.
Okay, well, let me talk to Supervisor Joseph.
Okay, then.
I would like to get this be done with
because I'd like to get the board resolution. I've asked for it and haven't gotten it.
Okay, well, let me see if we can get that together and then we'll get into the supervisor. Okay, now, Mike, you wanted to, did you talk to the people with the sinkhole?
Yes.
And are they here tonight?
No, they're not.
Okay.
She didn't want to load up her husband's wheelchair and all that and get out. They're pretty worn out from this whole thing. He had a heart attack 4 months ago and it just pulled the limb out of my yard. It's for, I got a lot of the information. I got their survey if you guys want to see that.
Okay, well, what my whole question is there anything that we can do now to help them? Is there any way that the MAC can help them?
No, it's already, the engineer condemned the pipeline, the county's putting it from there. They took on a new, if you remember, a 3 foot pipe in there. I cannot believe it. They kind of redo the plan. They have a smaller pipe in there now. And they're going ahead with the project. They just got the plant, permits today.
Oh,
and I went to the students. Got permits this week. And that's all she told me, basically. The survey was not required. Can I go through this one real quick?
Yeah.
You know, the engineer condemned the drain. So then they had to go in to get a new drain. And then the county says, well, we want an easement for that. Okay, well, we'll get a survey, and we'll give you guys an easement so you can clean the drain. That's what they thought they were going. Well, the county decided, oh, no, we don't want an easement. We don't want, you guys don't have to do the survey after they've already paid for it. And so the county gave them back their money for their permit.
Oh, they don't.
Because they messed up so bad, and they know they did. This whole thing is with that engineer coming out. He lives up here on the hill somewhere. Went out and condemning their drain. And there's something real fishy about that drain because, like you said, it's 15 feet down, comes across the property, and it drops down 10 feet straight down. And that's where it blew out at the bottom. You know, so you got water pressure going down 10 feet and then drop it again. So that puts that pipe 15 feet down. What homeowners would do that? I don't know very many homeowners that would put a drain underneath, you know, because that's what most El Serranians did. Put their own drain, get into their driveways, across to their property. But most of them are, you know, 2 feet down. Well, this one's 5, 10, 15 feet down. It's, and nobody can find any paperwork on it.
Yes, I had a question. They paid $4,000 for that survey that now the county is saying they don't need or didn't need. Did they refund that $4,000 also?
No, that survey is not the money.
Well, I think something has to go to the county that says when you tell a property owner that he has to spend $40,000 or $4,000 for a survey, that should be in writing to that property owner. I mean, that should be a policy that the county has. That engineer is the one that understood from the county, supposedly, that they had to spend the $4,000. So I think that's a huge error right there. The other thing that I really wonder about is why even, I know that the water running into a property supposedly and going out is the responsibility of the property owner. But when it comes off from a hill that is servicing 40 or 50 homes, there has to be some kind of a statue out there that says the county is because they're responsible for the other part of it. Then I don't quite understand, you know, there's got to be something we can research is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
must be.
I was trying all that because it just doesn't sound right to me because three houses up, the people have such terrible drainage problems. They have concrete their whole backyards in and put in their own drain pipes. Three houses up. The fireman, Gary's his name, and then come back this way, I think it's Kathy and somebody or something. I mean, they've been flooded out all the time. Anytime there's a project in the area, they show up because they're going to get more water.
So I don't think that we should just... I think we've got to write to the county and say, you know, this is a problem that we hear what you're saying, but it's picking up all the water from 40, 50 homes up the hill.
Or
more. And, you know, you cannot just leave it that way.
Marilyn. I went and talked to these people, and they're so frustrated they're moving. They have made definite plans to move. They are leaving, and they said that because of the county telling them, misspeaking and telling them they had to have a survey for their property, that two old buildings that have been there over 50 years, they found out they were over just a few feet onto the property next door. So now, if they didn't have all this time, if the county hadn't literally screwed them over, they would still be living there. They love their house. They have no choice but to leave now. They're selling out. I mean, this is, and they did not know. They had no idea what the Elks Branding map was. When I came there the other day, they'd never heard of the Elks Branding map. So that's a real problem with outreach, I tell you.
Okay, I think what we're doing, what we're talking about now, and Barbara, you suggested to write a letter to the county?
Yes, and I think it should be that anything requiring an expense of a property owner should be in writing to that property owner and not a verbal conversation.
Okay, and what kind of responsibility if it turns out it's not necessary?
Well, and if it's not necessary, I think that, if it's put in writing, first of all, it will correct the problem in the future. But currently, the problem is that it's the drainage coming down there is coming from 40, 50 or more homes, and it can't be the responsibility of just that one property owner, the way I see it.
Then they'll come back and say, collect and convey.
I understand what you're saying, but common sense tells me that that doesn't work.
Those people tore my heart out. I love that old couple, and I spent a lot of time with New Zealand over there to talk to them. So we can see what we can do and look at their survey.
What
scares me up. I'd like to find that engineer that condemned that pipeline.
Yeah. What do you suggest we do? What do you think we can do, Mike? What can Mac do?
Something needs to be done about the drainage in that area, definitely. It can't be on the property owners down below to pick up that tab. That's costing those people $75,000. It started out at $100,000.
And it could cost more. They don't know what they're going to find.
They are going to rebuild the drain. That's what they told me. They're going to do it, and then they're going to sell out. So they are taking care of it. But if they didn't have to do that, they wouldn't be leaving. So they are going to take care of it. And they shouldn't have to be that way, but, you know, that's the county.
But if they rebuild the drain, will that take care of the problem then?
That's what they're doing. That's what they're in the process of doing. They got the permit now.
Part of the problem. Okay, Mr. Harvey first, and then please.
I really think someone's got to talk to the whoever those jokers are there and probably there that the public works.
Public works.
Because I have some sort of silly recollection that each property owner is responsible for his water on this property.
Yeah.
And if it happens to shift over to somebody else, then that somebody else can look to him. Now, from what I hear is correct, we have 30 or 40 property owners, and all their stuff is coming down on me. I'm going to be pretty unhappy. And I think the county ought to get somebody out there and explain, and I'm sure there's a code for that.
Thank you.
Well, and Barbara is right about, you know, that the county should do something about that, but there's a classic example also that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand of the county is doing, because you go out there and you apply for a permit for something or you need to do some work for something, you've got one person telling you one thing that's a requirement, and you go back a month later